This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 247, where today CJ and AC are going to talk about Facebook, Cambridge Analytica, the congressional testimony by Mark Zuckerberg, some listener questions and feedback, and then handle some picks. Recorded live April the 12th, 2018.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, and maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself, though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
Hey CJ, how's it going?
You forget which day it was?
It took a second, yeah. No, we changed the way that we're doing our recordings. We were doing stuff, we were recording on Tuesdays. Now we're recording on Thursdays, which I guess there was some scheduling stuff that you and I've had to move things around enough on Tuesdays. We're like, all right, screw it, let's just move to Thursdays. But yeah, that also has helped. I know we've mentioned on the show before where we've run into issues where, you know, we'd record and then right when we finish recording, we see news gets released and then it ends up having to wait for an extra week. So hopefully now we'll be able to catch some additional stuff, but we got to...
Yeah, it seems like Tuesday is always the news day and we always recorded right before all the news came out. So
yeah,
hopefully a Thursday recording will give us a little bit more wiggle room to catch up on the latest stuff that came out on Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey,
how you been?
I've been good, man. Good. I've been really busy this week. I just finished recording all the content for another chapter for my course. So I've got it's going to be a monster too. I'm doing a chapter on React and the SharePoint frameworks. So it's going to be like a React primer. And I mean, just the demos are coming out to 1 hour and 40 minutes. So this is going to be like a monster thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize I've got like almost 15 hours of content in the course right now. So this is going to really blow it up. But it's for my Mastering the SharePoint Framework course that I'm doing for developers, my video course. So that's one big thing. And before anybody asks, that is part of Sprint 9, and I'm targeting the end of April for releasing Sprint 9. That'll include both jQuery chapter and the React chapter. So that's one. And another one was just today, I finally finished all the stuff I've been wanting to do of a huge like home office / network upgrade that I did. So I've had, you know, like a lot of geeks or like a lot of us, you know, you've got internet coming into the house, you've got a router, you got Wi-Fi. Some people go a little bit farther. I've got a home office. So not all of them, 6 rooms in our house, not just bedrooms, I'm talking all rooms, have network cable to them. It all comes together in one spot in the house. So I took all of those, I put them in a patch panel, I joined them to a bunch of cables that go up to my office. And I took all the stuff out of my office cabinet and got a real like server room rack, 4-foot rack, 27U space. Took one of my old servers I did from a long time ago, put it inside of a rack mounted chassis. And I just put everything in a rack. It's so much cleaner. I did color coded cables. I terminated my own cables, make sure they're the right length. So now I know that
you're gonna have to submit the photos to cable porn on Reddit.
So, funny story, you can't.
Oh.
For this, I got slapped for doing it. I tried to submit it, and I got slapped for doing it. And the reason why is because cable porn is for, like business and big stuff. If it's on there and you've seen it, it's only there for a little bit before they remove it. And they tell you, hey, if it's your home rig, send it to the subreddit Home Lab.
What?
Yeah. It was news to me. I got slapped for posting. Weird. Guys like, hey, cool rack. I'm going to shut this post down. I'm like, what the hell? So anyway, it is over there. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. But yeah, man, it's like I got color-coded cables. So do not, you know, it's now if you look at it, red is, it's internet. So do not unplug a red one or white. Yellow is TV stuff, so like Xbox and
media type stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And then black is for, I call them servers, but like a NAS. I have one server and then I have a video recorder for...
infrastructure-y cameras. Kind of things.
Oh, no. Infrastructure's blue.
Oh, ooh. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So it was fun though, man. It was
cool project.
It was. It's clean and it's... Oh my God, I'm so much happier now. So anyway, it's all good. So that was very a big nice. Thing. Big thing for me. Hey, what about... I got one more thing of banter I want to run through, but before we do that, what about you? What's up with you these days?
Oh, I've been up to my eyeballs in Kubernetes. I think I've mentioned it on the show before that we're moving off Docker Cloud and onto Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. And I've been learning a lot. It's been really, really interesting. I'm really liking it. Really liking it. It's very mature, I guess, for want of a better word. And there's a lot of momentum around it, right? Mm-hmm. So the last few weeks for me have been like, how do I do? There's like 50 million blog posts on that. And how do I do? There's a Slack group to help me answer my questions where there's lots of people helping out. And how do I do Blit? And yeah, so been learning a lot around Kubernetes, really, really impressed actually. And it's been a long time coming. I've really wanted to get into it, but I'm kind of being forced into it now, which is really good in some respects and bad in others. But it is really cool. And there's this other thing that I'm learning called Helm, which is...
Oh, yeah.
If you're familiar... So it's for Kubernetes. And if you're familiar with ARM templates for Azure... The way to think about Helm is it's like an ARM template except for your application. Mm. So, you know, ARM templates are for your infrastructure in Azure. You could say, I want a network like this, and I want storage like that, and I want a virtual machine like this, and I want an IP for this, and all of that. And you sort of declare it's an ARM template. It's a declarative way of defining your infrastructure. Mm. Helm is kind of like that except for your application components. So you can say, here's this container or this service, and it needs to work with this other service, and here's how it's configured. And then you basically apply a set of variables to that template at runtime, and it stamps out a copy of your application. Mm-hmm. And then when you want to upgrade it, when you want to say, oh, I want to switch this component out of my software for a new version, you change your Helm, they call them chart. Mm-hmm. You change your chart and update it with the new version and upgrade your application, and it goes boop, and up does it in Kubernetes for you. It's really, really clever.
I love how, totally unrelated, but I love how so many of these projects, like open source projects, they pick a theme and they stick with it. Like Kubernetes is the ship wheel. So it's like they go by the short name of what, K8S, and it's the eight different points on the wheel.
Eight as in the number.
Yeah, yeah. So Kubernetes,
K8S, yeah.
K8 with an S on it.
Yeah. And then it's also, I think, that the Kubernetes has eight letters in it.
Yes. Yeah. And then they had they also have a Helm. So that's like the helmsman on a ship.
It doesn't have eight letters. What am I talking about? I think I'm full of it. Hold on. Yeah, it's got 10. I guess so with the K and the S on the end, yeah. There you go, there's 10.
Nice try. Helm. And then Helm is using, what'd you say, charts? So for like...
Yeah, charts. And that's cool. So Helm is the client, is the CLI, like the client part of the application. But the component that lives in the Kubernetes cluster that helps deploy your charts is called Tiller.
Oh, there you go.
So you've got a Helm and a Tiller. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they keep the theme. So anyway, I'm loving that stuff. I'm learning loads, and I've got our app up and running on Kubernetes on our dev boxes now. So it was a pretty straightforward migration.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very
if you're
cool.
Doing containers already, it's really easy. Everything's same, but sometimes different words for the same concept.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to dive straight into Kubernetes instead of like trying to stand up something else. I'm looking to do that same thing, to have a little cluster up in Azure and create a couple different namespaces, one for dev, one for this one project I'm working on.
Oh, yeah.
Kernel and everything. And
that's really nice.
I want to use the Azure Container Service. So I'm definitely not anywhere close to standing this thing up yet. So I'm hoping for some news coming out of build in a few months.
AKS is pretty good. I've got a cluster running with that I'm using as my dev box, basically, for this Kubernetes work. And it's been pretty good. There's a bunch of issues in the GitHub for AKS, though. So hopefully they GA by build, I would really hope. But it's not looking good. Mm. Anyway, we'll see. I've got a little test for you.
Uh-oh. Should I have studied?
Maybe. I don't know if you can find the answers to these. So there's this really funny image going around on the internet at the moment entitled, How Kiwi Are You? And you sent me, I think it was you and Jason Himmelstein were eating dinner somewhere or dessert somewhere, and you took a photo of a piece of kiwi fruit that had been chopped in half, and you said, CJ's been replaced on the podcast by a slice of kiwi fruit or something like that.
No, so I didn't say that. Jason said that. I saw that on Facebook when you saw it.
So here's my sweet revenge. Anyway, this is entitled, How Kiwi Are You? You get 1 point for every word that you can have even a reasonable guess of what it means. There are 22 words in here, but I'm going to go through probably just 10 of them, I think, for brevity's sake. Mm-hmm. But I would love to hear your, when I say this particular word, what you think it means or what you think it's referring to. And I'll be very liberal with my points giving. How about that? Not in the political sense, but I mean in the very liberal with giving out points. There you go.
We'll go political in a minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so AC, how Kiwi are you? Let's see how well you, how many of these you've picked up from me over the years. Okay, first one, jandal.
Can you use it in a sentence?
I'm going to the beach, so I better take my jandals.
Sandals? Flip-flops?
Yeah, kind of. Flip-flops. Yeah, good work. Okay. That's 1 point. Nice work. Fijoa.
Okay, like the last one, I have no clue, so I'm hoping for using it in a sentence.
Without totally giving it away, that's a tasty-looking Fijoa.
Breakfast?
Well, you can have them for breakfast, but no, it's a type of fruit. Mm. It's like a kiwi fruit, except about that size and shape, but totally different. Anyway, okay, chili bin.
Oh God! I don't know any of these. How about a sentence?
I'm going camping, so I better take my chili bin. It's very literal. I'll give you that.
A little stove?
No, the stove heats things up.
Oh, a cooler.
A cooler. There you go.
All right, got it.
Wop wops. And the sentence is, oh man, I've got to go pick up this thing from the wop wops.
Okay, so I was first going to say, man, isn't that a slang, like a derogatory slang? But no, I'm going to...
Oh, it might be in some countries. Maybe I'm getting myself in trouble. Definitely not in New Zealand. Yeah.
All right, so picking up from the wop wops. How about grandparents?
Your grandparents may live in the wop wops, but it's an area. It's like far out rural, middle of nowhere. Man, you live in the wop wops. It's like a really long way away.
That's got to be 4 questions. I might have a quarter of a point. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. Let's give you a quarter, 2 1/4. Glad wrap.
Like saran wrap? Like plastic
yes,
wrap?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
There's actually something called glad wrap, I thought.
Yeah, there is.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. So I got it.
Yeah, there you go.
Is it from New Zealand?
No, I don't think so. We just call it glad wrap, but I think in the States they call it saran wrap, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Or cling wrap or whatever. Is that what you
call
it?
The stuff that's frustrating as hell to use.
Don't, for goodness sake, don't let it fold back on itself. Are you in deep trouble?
Yeah, just get a new box.
Okay, stubbies. Man, that's a really nice pair of stubbies.
Glasses?
No, they're like this pair. It's a brand of shorts from like, that were huge in like the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, I suppose.
Oh, really short shorts?
Really short shorts. Like, yeah. But dudes wear them.
Yeah.
And they're always one size too small. So.
Nah. Yeah.
Gumboots.
Water shoes? Like, yeah.
Yeah, like...
Galoshes.
Galoshes or winter boots or whatever. What do you call them here? Like the... I guess you're in Florida. You probably don't own any.
Oh, there's a lot of rain here. We don't, not in the winter, but yeah, we have them...
Rain boots. There you go.
Called rain boots, yeah.
Okay. How many is that? Do you remember?
I don't know.
It's going to be 6 or 7.
I'm still trying to get to a whole point.
Okay. Togs. Man... Those togs look a little tight.
Pants?
No, they're not really pants. They're a bathing suit or a swimsuit.
Okay.
Like, there's a very clear definition between togs and undies. But anyway,
gotcha.
Togs like Speedos, things like that.
Okay.
Okay, last one. Pack a sad.
It's a country next to India.
Don't go pack... Packers. No, it is not Pakistan. It is Pakistan. You're really packing a sad. You're throwing down, you're sort of having a bit of a fit kind of thing.
Okay. I was gonna say something akin to that, but
so I think you get I think that's 10. It's pretty close anyway. I think you get a solid 4 out of 10.
So I'm gonna need to make sure that I exclude episode 247 from when I try to actually visit New Zealand. They're going to be like, nope, sorry, you can't have your card.
Yes, the immigration officers ask you these questions. It's sort of like the civics test when you become a US citizen, except when you try to go to New Zealand. There you go.
I thought you were going to use other phrases that you've used on me before. I was like, okay, these I can probably get. But
they're all very Kiwi sayings. It's quite hilarious. Anyway, thanks for playing. You get honorary Kiwi status for at least getting more than a fried egg, which is Zero. Okay.
I can land at an airport. I just can't walk through customs. All right, got it.
Yeah. Nice. Right. Hey, what else we got?
Man, there's been a lot of news going on recently about this. I wanted to touch on this because I know you and I have some pretty strong but not identical opinions on this. But if you've been living under a rock, which a lot of people do, we know about the whole issue between Facebook and the Cambridge Analytica and all the data sharing or data stealing or however you want to end up looking at it. And this past week, actually over the last 2 days, Mark Zuckerberg has been giving testimony to Congress.
Mr. Data Accumulator.
Yeah. has been giving. I haven't seen that one though.
Somebody colorized the photo of him sitting in this congressional hearing with a Starfleet suit on and looked just like Data out of it's pretty funny.
I've been following this because I find it very curious. And I guess I probably should start this. I think that you have to say something like this just to do a cover my ass thing. So I am a shareholder in Facebook. I had more shares. I sold them. A couple of weeks ago, but I still have shares in Facebook. So I do have an interest in the company, but not like I'm getting rich or all that kind of stuff on it. Anyway, so you know, the news is that there was a guy that a couple of years ago, he built an app. He got a bunch of people to actually use the app based on the way Facebook was at the time. When I answered the app was able to get access to my data, but it also was able to get access to your information as well because you and I are friends, CJ. Mm. He took 300,000 people, used the app and took this personality test. It meant that he accumulated, I think, 87 million-ish people's information. Mm. And then he turned around and took this information and sold it that he had accumulated and pulled offline. He had then sold it to Cambridge Analytica. And I heard in the testimony, Zuck said that he named one of the company and he said that there were a couple other ones. Mm. He sold the information to Cambridge Analytica. At the time, Facebook found out about it. They told them that they had to delete all the data that was there. Apparently Cambridge Analytica did sign a legal agreement that said that they had done that. That came out in the testimony. Well, again, some of the stuff in the testimony, things could be corrected on follow-up in the next like week or two.
Yeah.
But this is what I'm trying to just speak just to facts and no opinion yet, okay? So Cambridge Analytica said that they had gotten rid of it, but then apparently they used the data for the Trump campaign as a customer the Trump campaign was a customer of theirs and using it to be able to personalize ads and target a message not the Trump campaign didn't. The Russians, a couple of Russian organizations were able to use data from Cambridge Analytica to do like a bunch of ads and try and influence the election. So this week, Zuck's been going and giving testimony to Congress. Now, before we get into it, I will say there's two things about it that were big takeaways for me. Number one is that, holy crap, some of these senators' interns should have done a much better job prepping some of these questions.
Oh, it was embarrassing.
Oh, it was like, I feel like I've just been getting a root canal, like watching it go, and I've been talking to the damn computer, to my iPad, as it's been streaming. Like, that's not how it works. You can't email WhatsApp. It's encrypted. No, so we can't see it. It's encrypted. You can't see it. Yeah, but your systems talk to each other without any human interaction. Like, no, they don't just have a brain. But there was that part of it. And then the other side was...
very cringeworthy questions, that's for sure.
Oh, there definitely was. And then the other side of it was, I got to give mad props to Zuckerberg for not just busting out laughing during some of the questions. Yeah. He's like, there's one or two times when he's like, I really don't understand what you're trying to ask.
Yes, which, yeah.
You know, going through his head's like going, Senator, that makes no sense. Could you say that again?
yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, one question in particular, I think, I can't remember who said it. It was a female senator who said... you know, how many categories of information do you collect? And Zuck just looked like, what?
Yeah. She's like, of the 96 different categories that are there, which ones are you, how many of them are you collecting? It's like,
what? I don't know what you mean. Could you, and he said, I'm not sure I understand or something like that. And she rephrased the question basically the exact same. And he's like, yep, still don't understand.
Yeah, he was very polite. He was very respectful. He took it on the chin quite a few times. But, you know, it's interesting because I know you and I have talked a little bit about this and what's their responsibility here and stuff. Yeah. And I think from my point of view, as a number one, it's a free service. You opt into it.
You are the product.
You are the product. You give all of your information to it. You consent to everything. You're the one that is made. They don't do anything to harvest stuff from you. You opted into coming into this entire thing. So that's one bit.
Yeah.
The other side is that unlike what, finally someone asked this at the end of the first day, and I wish that they had done it before, but unlike what the news has been saying, Facebook doesn't sell your data to advertisers. They never give your data to advertisers. Advertisers go to Facebook and they say, I'm looking for people that match this. Facebook says, okay, we've created an audience that matches that. Give us an ad. And we can target those people. So it's like, okay, so they're not giving it, but there's a difference where an app developer, if I built an app that was on Facebook or a site that used Facebook logins, and in that app, just like we do in Azure AD, where we say, these are the permissions that I need. Do you consent to this? If someone uses the app and they say yes, then I, as the app developer, can use the Facebook API to get to that data. And then I could pull it offline like that guy did back in 2015 and do whatever I end up wanting with it. So those are two different things. Since that happened, Facebook learned about it. They changed the way that they work. Then that is no longer possible. And now the question that comes up then is like, you know, so what is their responsibility in this? And my take on the whole thing is, as a private company, as a business, they're a public company, as a business, as one that offers a free service, and as one that they give you all the controls to see what Facebook information, what they have on you, to see what kind of categories they put you in, to let you download your data, to let you delete yourself completely from their system. I mean, from all of that stuff, in the past, they've made some mistakes, but if we look at where they are today, I don't see that they're doing anything wrong. I do like some of the things that Facebook is saying that they're going to do from the stuff that's going on. For instance, they're doing a complete audit of everything going back and saying, you know, look, we need to do this right now. We need to figure this out about doing things about like when there's somebody that wants to do an ad, then doing a little bit more background on them and making sure that, hey, if this person's doing an ad, I want to see, as a consumer, I want to look and see all the ads that Hyperfish is running on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I see one ad, but I want to see all of them.
Yeah.
I also want to make sure that it is Hyperfish that's doing it in Kirkland, Washington, and not Hyperfish that looks like Hyperfish, but really is running out of St. Petersburg, Russia, or out of Yemen, or something like that.
Yeah.
So I love all that stuff that they end up doing there. And I think that the one thing that I guess you can hold their feet to the fire on is that when they went through in the past and they said, they told these companies and this individual, delete the data, and they got a legal agreement that came back to them, you know, they trusted it. But I mean, it's a legal agreement. I mean, what more could you really do with that?
Yeah. We're not super far apart on how we think about this, though. Like, I know we've chatted about it a little bit online and we disagree on some things, but like, in general, speaking of Zuck's testimony, I think he said in general about a million times in the last 2 days.
That sounds like, I'm a lawyer, that sounds like.
In general, I don't believe, and I'm no lawyer, but I don't believe they've done anything legally wrong. Facebook in particular. Cambridge Analytica, absolutely, by the sounds of it.
Well, they didn't do, well, yeah, they broke their, they signed.
They broke their agreement with what they were allowed to do with that data from Facebook, right?
Well, hold on. I'm going to correct one thing. I know what you're saying there, but let me just correct one thing. They didn't have an arrangement with Facebook. They bought the data from this third party.
The third party. Yes, correct.
Yeah.
So the guy that created the quiz app.
Yes.
He broke their agreement with Facebook of what he could and couldn't do with that data.
Right. He did. And then Cambridge Analytica broke. They signed an agreement, according to what in the testimony, they signed an agreement with Facebook saying we deleted the data.
Yeah.
Clearly they didn't.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Sorry, I got that run the wrong way. So yeah,
that's okay.
I don't believe Facebook's done anything legally wrong. I think the guy that created the quiz app did something legally wrong, and it sounds like Cambridge Analytica did as well. However, having said that, and things have moved a lot since this happened, right? So there's much better controls and stuff in Facebook now as well. I do feel like that it's not all personal. It's not all on an individual. Because they stick something in Facebook, they shouldn't have a reasonable expectation of a certain set of terms with that service. So, like when you sign up for Facebook, you have to agree to a set of terms of service, right? And it's super long and really complicated and all that sort of stuff, and nobody reads it. However, for an average person, I don't think Facebook does a very good job of explaining what they're agreeing to when they do certain actions. So, A, when they sign up to the service, right? And you could argue, yeah, that's not Facebook's problem. That's the person's problem for not reading the terms of service. And legally, you'd be correct. But I think they could do better at explaining it so people understood a little bit better, right? Nothing legally wrong with it, but just ethically wrong with it, right? And then when you go to sign up for a fart app or a quiz app, Facebook used to suck and they've gotten a lot better at it, but it's not particularly clear for an average user what they're agreeing to when they click a login button. And, you know, now you get the login button and you sign in and it asks, hey, here's what you're consenting to. Here are the things you're consenting to. Same as you would with an Azure Active Directory app. But for example, like when you go and sign into a consent to an Azure AD app, those scopes, they're not self-describing. Mm-mm. Like unless you go read the technical documents on what those scopes give you access to, you're unlikely to understand what you're really consenting to, I think. And Azure AD have been doing things like putting more links and help links in the consent page to take you to the places that describe what those scopes mean. And that's where I think Facebook could do better at. I don't think they've done anything legally wrong. I just don't think they've really helped users understand what they're signing up to. And they've probably done that on purpose.
Here's one thing. I hear what you're saying there. And let me look at a little bit of a different kind of perspective here. Let me take a step back. I think that of all the different things that we've seen come out of this whole Facebook mess that's going on with information stuff, Facebook's been around for about 14 years. And it's evolved and have an app platform. People can put stuff in it. We have advertising platform. The service has grown into being a really good business, right? For them and for shareholders, and for users alike.
Yeah.
But I think that in what they've done in the past, I don't think that anything that they've really done, I guess you and I are going to, based on what you just said, I think we may disagree on this, but I don't think that they've done anything to try to hide or to trick that's not what you said, but maybe to hide or to make it hard for users to understand what they were doing to get to consent to giving their data in it. I think that really what it is, and I don't think this is just a Facebook thing, because you alluded to Azure AD, and this is definitely true in that sense. Google, the same boat. Twitter, the same boat. I think that we have all, as developers, as people working in these more social systems, I think that we've all just kind of learned and we've gotten more mature and we've grown up to understand what is the right way to do stuff, what is the wrong way to do stuff, and we're kind of learning as we go along. So I don't think that Facebook did anything wrong. Looking back at it, we're all like, oh yeah, hindsight's 2020. You should have done it like this. Like, oh well, yeah, we totally should have, right? Once we see the way it's all set up now, I shouldn't, like, for the switch that I built in my house, or the network stuff I did in my house, I should have bought two specific kind of switches. Instead, I bought two 8-port switches and a 24 port. I wish I had bought two 24s. Now I've got two 8-port switches to sell, and it made things simpler. Now that I know, it's hindsight, but this is, some people are, I know I'm going to get a lot of people that disagree with this. I genuinely think that the intentions of Mark Zuckerberg, who is the chairman, the CEO, has the controlling shareholder. I believe he's got two seats on the board. It's his company. You can't run him off.
Yeah.
The board can't vote him off because he's got too many votes to be able to protect himself.
Yeah.
I do think that he genuinely, from the beginning, has always felt, well, once they got past the hot or not thing, he's always thought and tried to do things to make it a better platform in terms of connecting people and then to make money off of it. But he's never really, I haven't seen anything in Facebook that really compromises on what that stuff is. Maybe there's some decisions where there've been, hey, you're using user data for this kind of stuff. Effectively, when I'm sitting down and I look at the guy doing the congressional testimony, I believe him. I trust him. I believe that that's the kind of person that I want running this company, that's making these kind of decisions and that's setting the tone. And setting the tone for the industry of what we're doing. So what I'm saying is that I see that what's going on here with this whole congressional thing and a lot of stuff that the mainstream media is talking about Facebook and the Cambridge Analytica stuff, I see it as a bullshit witch hunt, a lot of it. And a lot of it's manufacturing a lot of hype. It's good the discussion is happening. It's good that a lot of the changes are going to be happening from it. But I don't see any new part of this quote news. I only see an S in there, right?
No, they're the scapegoat right now. But it is part of a wider topic that is going on, especially in Europe right now with GDPR and all that, right?
Oh, yeah.
These guys are just one example, but there's loads of examples, maybe not quite as big as this. But I feel like Facebook's particular case, they're in a real predicament, right? Because their business is selling ads to people, but their mission is they say, is helping people connect and share, right? And at some point, that's a seesaw balancing act. And every decision that goes on, imagine in a Facebook meeting where they go, we want to make it so that apps can't consent to anything. You just get a random number as the user's ID, and that's all you ever know about a user, right? Mm-hmm. And then the ad team come in and go, or the ad team or the data team or whatever you want to call them, come in and go, we can't do that because that means our advertisers won't know who somebody is. Or there's always going to be a seesaw decision point like that. And which way, like, do you tip the scales slightly in terms of a for-profit company making money, or do you tip the scales back towards the privacy and security of your users? And that, I think, is going to be their predicament while they've got this business model, right? And they might act ethically. You could argue one way or another on that. But I feel like same goes for Google. Mm-hmm. Same goes for Microsoft in some cases. Facebook's not alone in this. But those are the kinds of decisions. Do you tip the scale to make money, or how do you balance the scale with that and user privacy? And when your only business model is selling ads to people, I got to believe it's a really tough decision to keep the seesaw balanced that is in line with your company's overall mission and direction.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you on that. And I think, man, talk about, what I'm trying to say here is that I think one of the things I'm kind of surprised at with this whole thing is that, to me, there's an elephant in the room that isn't being discussed in this whole thing in terms of parties that should be, where this should be raised, these points should be raised here is that, and let's flip it over. Let's talk about Microsoft for a second. Mm. Microsoft bought LinkedIn. That, I think, would that not scare people the same way that we're doing right now? Now, LinkedIn, they have an ad model. That's mm-hmm. how they make money. They do it. There is a membership option that you can pay to get.
Yeah, and job postings and recruiting stuff and sales things. There's lots of paid products on LinkedIn.
But there's also the ad model. And you think about now, so Microsoft, one company, has my entire work, history or my entire work network. And it's not just my work, it's my professional network, I should say, which is not just, if I work for Ford or I work for Contoso, let's use that one. If I work for Contoso, my LinkedIn profile shows all the people that I work with at Contoso, but it also shows the things that I've opted to make public or keep private. It also shows my connections to Fabricam or to other competitors and stuff, because I may want to go find a job somewhere else as well. But then another product that Microsoft owns is Office 365, and my entire work network is inside of Office 365 in Contoso.
Totally.
Same company now owns both my professional network that may not coincide with my work network. Mm. And is there any issue related to that? Now, there hasn't been anything that's really happened there. It's kind of like with Facebook. Has there been anything that's really happened? No, Facebook didn't do anything. Someone was able to compromise certain thing that they had set up and was able to kind of bridge things around and take advantage of the data that Facebook had collected. Not Facebook doing it, but somebody had done that. There's nothing stopping someone from having a configuration thing or noticing a certain flaw, like in a service, like the one that we have with Office 365, like 2 years ago, where you could log in as any tenant or you could, something like that was going on.
You could log in as anybody.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of stuff. There's things we're all still kind of learning. We're all still learning and bumping our head against certain things here. And there's stuff is always going to come up. Mm-hmm. You're always going to be a victim to a lack of imagination until something happens, and then you got to deal with it.
Yeah. That's a good example, right? Microsoft has to tread a very, very fine line with how they deal with LinkedIn, right? Because that is technically not a company's information, right? That's your personal information about you. Mm-hmm. And Office 365 is paid for by a company. And so it's not your personal information, right? It's the company's. And how they integrate those two, they've been very, very careful so far. And that's why we haven't seen much integration, I think, because they've always got a balance. I bet that discussions are wildly frustrating internally. Probably got loads of great ideas, but can't execute on them because legal get in the way and say, no, you can't be like mixing and matching all that because the person hasn't consented to that, right? They haven't given us permission to use their information in this way. Mm-hmm. But that is a really interesting, that's also a battle of business models, but also a battle of, or a seesaw of business models, but also a seesaw of personal versus company information.
It really is. I mean, and to me, that one, I think, is even more scary. I mean, for me personally, it's not, because I mean, I work for myself. So if my company finds out about my professional network, well, that's basically my wife is going to find out. So I hope to God I'm not hiding.
No, but you're a 365 customer. Imagine if they started selling, imagine if me as an advertiser could go to Microsoft and say, hey, I want to know which other organization Andrew Connell is doing business with.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's data you could mine from 365. Microsoft would never tell you that, right?
Yep.
And I'm not saying, not even hypothetically, but like in theory, right, there, that data is possible to find. Imagine how valuable that is. It's insanely valuable.
It was like the question that Zuck got on 2 days ago when that one senator, I believe from Wisconsin, he said, you know, is there a file on Andrew Connell at Facebook? Can I come up to you and say, can I get the file from Facebook on Andrew Connell? And Zuckerberg was like going, no, we would never do that. And he goes, no, technically, can you do it? And he goes, well, yeah, technically you can. He goes, well, I rest my case. I'm like, same thing, right? Microsoft has my file on Office 365. They could tell you about every single email that I have submitted. They could tell you about all the files that I've stored up in OneDrive. Mm-hmm. Google could tell you all the stuff that I have in Google Drive. You can do all that stuff. And do they do it? No, there's a level of trust that you set up there. And you know, with Microsoft.
Well, and there's a commercial agreement in 365 they've agreed to.
I was just going to say, there's this SLA, financially backed SLA, and that kind of stuff that all, it has that stuff.
You're not the product when you're a 365 customer, but in LinkedIn, you are the product, right?
Yeah.
So, interesting. I think they are being made a bit of a scapegoat of, don't get me wrong, and I don't think it's just Facebook problem by any stretch, but in Facebook's case, because they are the natural monopoly right now, I think, he got asked whether he thought he was a monopoly. Of course, he's never going to say yes to that. But I do feel like they are kind of a natural monopoly right now, whether they like it or not. And I would like to see them be a bit clearer and do a bit more for the average user who's not technically savvy and just try a bit harder to be a bit more like open about what's possible when you sign into a fart app.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny you say that, because I know that that's one of the bits of feedback that I've given to like the Azure AD team. You know, one of the big asks that I have is that, you know, when I'm creating an app in Azure AD and I pick these different permissions, I would like to be able to put a description in there, or a little bit freeform text that is like maybe one of those little like, you know, iInfo like circle with a tooltip that essentially lets me say, I need read access to your mailbox, but it doesn't just say read access to all your mail. I want you to be able to hover over a tooltip and allowing me as the developer say, I need it because I want to be able to move your email. You're asking me to provide you a service and I need to be able to move your email from this folder to this folder. And to do that, I need write access to your mailbox. I'm not going to send any emails. I just need to be able to move things around for you based on what you're offering from me. I mean, that's that kind of stuff is where I'd like to see them go. But I mean, we'll see where we get there. All those guys are dealing with that issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems and ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc.
Hey, CJ, we've gotten a handful of listener questions and feedback, and every week you and I sit down, we do one of these episodes, and I look back and look at the ones that we've received, and man, I always forget that until after the show that we didn't do it. And so we've got a little bit of feedback that we always want to give it to. And I went back and found we've got a couple of them that even go back to January, and it's already, you know, the middle of April. So there's a couple I definitely want to call out here by a couple different people. We got three of them that were submitted. And then we're also going to do three or four things that were submitted. And then we got also a listener pick that we're going to do at the end of the show here. The first one, though, that I want to read out here, I laughed out loud when I saw this message. So a couple episodes ago, actually a lot of episodes ago, about, oh gosh, what was it, about 30 weeks ago, something like that, or a bunch of weeks ago, in episode 204, did a pick by something called Git XL Trail. And what it was a something that was like a basically allowing you to do work with Excel, but doing it within Git, kind of a thing, right? Like putting Git and Excel together.
Yeah.
So the funny thing is that the guy that actually did that thing that you called out he's a listener on the show. And so he wrote in. His name is, and forgive me if I mispronounce this, but Bjorn Steele. He says, hey, Chris and Andrew, thanks for talking about GetXFail in your latest podcast. I'm one of the guys behind it. You guys actually crack me up quite a bit, especially the bit about the terrible life, which is definitely me in my former life. Anyway, I just want to drop a note and say thank you. If you ever want to hear some of the terrible or not so terrible Excel stuff, just let me know. We have plenty of stories to tell. All the best from London. That's awesome.
Yeah. How cool was that? I just came across this thing, and turns out he was listening to the show, which I found hilarious. So definitely thanks for getting in touch, Bjorn. That's awesome that you listen to the show. We'll take you up on getting you on the show to talk about some of those terrible Excel things. But definitely go, if you're dealing with Excel and you're a developer, definitely go check out get-xltrail. Excel Trail, I guess.
Yeah. Go check episode 204 in the show notes and we'll get a link to it.
Or XLT Rail. I'm not even sure what that bit's supposed to be. Anyway.
Yeah.
XL Trail or XLT Rail? I'm not sure. Yeah. Anywho.
Hey, I got another one too. Now, this one's a little bit longer here. And this one, I've read through this one and it's a longer thing. And I'd like to read the whole thing because I want to get your take on this, right? Mm. So we have a one that was submitted here by, and I don't want to use everybody's full name because we already called, I know I did in the last one, but I don't want to use everybody's full name.
Let's go first names then.
Yeah, first name, last initial. So this is from Elliot M. So his email was about automate the creation and consent of Microsoft Graph apps with PowerShell. He said, hey, I'm an IT pro and a longtime listener of the Microsoft Cloud Show. From the start, your podcast has made the developer side of the Microsoft Cloud accessible and interesting. I've been able to take a lot from your discussions and interviews and apply it to my job. I manage a bunch of Office 365 tenants with PowerShell, and I find that the Microsoft Graph functionality exceeds what can be done with PowerShell. I want to be able to easily create and consent Microsoft Graph apps at scale and perform test calls to make sure that they work. I've put together this PowerShell script that does just that. It connects to Office 365, creates an Azure AD application, assigns the appropriate permissions, and execute a test call that then removes the app. It'll do this for both delegated and app permissions without having to manually visit the Azure portal app registration portal. If you're using delegated permissions, it registers itself against the Windows Azure Graph API as well and adds auth to permission grants to allow all users or specific users to perform calls with delegated permissions. It'll export the details about the app to a CSV so you can retrieve the client ID in secret for use in apps. Then we'll have a link to it in the show notes. That's just my little footnote because you provided a link to it. He's passing it along because he doesn't. Let me go back to the quote. I'm passing this along because I wouldn't have gotten into Office 365 development if it wasn't for you guys, and I haven't found anyone who finds this as exciting as I do. On the off chance that you don't have somebody that does this already or something that does this already, I hope you find it useful. Cheers, Elliot. Oh, sorry, it was a long one. So what's your take?
I really like it. I think the problem he's trying to solve here is, and if I've understood it correctly, rather than manually going into the Azure AD portal and creating apps and app IDs and secrets and granting particular permission scopes, is that it can be scripted with PowerShell. Mm-hmm. And so say you're in the IT organization or in the IT group of an organization, and you say a big company, and you had a bunch of developers or a bunch of IT folks building systems and solutions, you could in theory put up a form in your organization that somebody had to fill out to get a new app ID for an app that they were building, say for a system or solution they were building. And then you could do some sort of approval workflow and routing of that. And then when it was done and it was approved, it executed a script that went and created that app in Azure AD and assigned the right permissions to it, grabbed the details, and then sent them back to the person who had applied for that app ID. So being able to script the creation of an app, I think, would be pretty useful. Mm-hmm. And help automate and take the manual work out of it in an organization. I could see use for it.
Yeah, it definitely can be. The part that kind of concerned me about it, and I've looked at the script and I've scanned through the script. I haven't looked at it in detail. And maybe it would be nice to kind of have this clarified in the blog post. But when it talks about the automation of the creation and consent, the automation of consent is what scared me. Kind of going right back to the discussion we just had about Facebook. Mm. Where I know that I get that this was built for testing, but looking at the script, I can't tell if it does that. I don't think it does. but it's a pretty big script. And so as I was looking through it, I don't see where it looks like he's trying to mimic the login. There is a spot in there where you put the username and password in, but I can't tell if he's like mimicking opening up a browser, going through the consent dialogue, and then coming back out of it. And if it is, that's the thing that kind of scares me, where that's really getting around. Someone may not realize what's going on. I'm not saying
that. Yeah, I think what he's saying there is, rather than, so what happens is when you have an app that has delegated user permissions, say it might be user.read basic.all, there's a scope right in the graph. You have to, as a user, you have to consent to that. But an admin can consent on behalf of all users in an organization so that users don't see the consent screen when they use that app. And I think what he's saying here is the ability, when you're creating the app, to go and do that admin consent on behalf first so that users don't see the consent screen. And that's a pretty normal thing to go do. It's kind of a, you could do it through the Azure AD portal. And he's saying in this paragraph in here that you can do it through the Azure AD Graph API, not through the Microsoft Graph, which is sort of making sure that users don't see that consent screen, and it's sort of the admins are doing it on behalf of the users. I don't have too much of a problem with that.
It's cool. A cool script, though. I mean, it's nice to see how to automate this stuff and to have an example that actually shows it. So,
yeah, it'd be super useful for orgs to, if they're creating a bunch of Azure AD apps and managing those.
Yeah, it's nice that we have that someone's written a script to demo this of using all the different APIs. So it's cool to see that we have, you know, to know that we have APIs that allow us to do this stuff.
Yeah, I definitely want to take a look at it in more detail. Thanks for emailing in, Elliot. It was Elliot, wasn't it? Yes, it was.
Elliot, there we go. Yep.
All right. Based on last week's show we did on voice and Teams, I got a note from Brendan Ford, who's a friend of mine for many years and a friend of the show, who said he listened to the show and listened to us have a little whine about Teams and setting up meetings and things. And he just sent me a little bit of feedback. He said, or not, this is not verbatim, but in effect, he said that you can schedule Teams meetings from in Outlook on Windows. So you know how there's like an online meeting button in the top bar, that he sees a Microsoft Teams meeting schedule button there now. And I'm not sure if that's some sort of add-in that does that or how that gets there. But you know, I mentioned that I couldn't do it in OWA, I couldn't do it on Outlook on a Mac, and I couldn't figure out how to invite external parties to a Teams meeting from within the Teams app. So it was super infuriating for me, but it sounds like if I had Outlook on Windows, then the Teams meeting button is already there. And no doubt that means it'll come to the other clients in due course as well. So anyway, Thanks for the feedback, Brendan. And thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, it's funny from our discussion last week that we had about the whole calling and Skype for Business and everything. I think at one point during our discussion, we were talking a little bit about licensing and costs. And I went and pulled up my subscriptions, and I saw how much I was paying for Skype for Business with a PSTN and a PBX and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So since then, I have started the process of winding that down after I saw how much I was paying. And not so much how much I was paying, but realizing how little I used the phone number, and so what options I could go to get around it. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the process of moving everything over to Google Voice is for free. Mm. I mean, there was other things like Grasshopper looked awesome.
Rings, your needs are pretty basic, so it's...
Yeah, it was really basic.
You don't need to go too far with it.
It's kind of a pain in the ass, though, because I have to... Google Voice won't let me port a number unless the number is from a mobile platform, like AT&T or Verizon. So what I had to do first is I bought an AT&T...
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah,
AT&T. I can see what's happening.
No, it's not that bad. So I went and signed up for an AT&T prepaid plan. Mm-hmm. I didn't put any minutes on the prepaid plan. You have to do something with data. So I paid $1 to put a dollar's worth of data on there. I took an old phone. I had to order a SIM, which cost me $1.50. So AT&T is giving me, I have a SIM today. Once that's done, I'm porting my number that I have in Skype for Business over to my AT&T phone. And then once that's done, I'll go to Google Voice and I'll port that number over to Google Voice, which apparently is supposed to work. And I'm like, all right, cool. Got my number all set up. Ta-da. And I just went from spending $47 a month down to just a standard E5. That'll be a hell of a lot less because Google Voice is free.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a bunch of hoops. Be nice if you could just port directly.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, I do have one more thing from a listener, and then we're going to do some picks.
Yep.
We got a question here or a submission. This is pretty cool. And I was aware of this, but I don't think we've ever called this out. This is by Nathaniel S. So Nathaniel sent us about the NASA free ebook archive. He says, "Hey guys, I love the show and I came across this today and I thought you might find it interesting. I just found out that NASA has a free ebook library that you can download a bunch of books from here." We'll have the link in the show notes. I hope that it posts all right. Love the show and keep up the good work. I don't know if you were aware of this. I've been onto the site. I've checked out the ebooks. I've downloaded like old, you know, shuttle things, Challenger. There's a whole section about what the emergency plans are for shuttle on a return to launch site and what a go around abort is. And there's some really cool stuff in this thing.
Man, this is a black hole. Excuse the pun. Man, this is awesome. Like, there's a lot to go and read here. That's going to be some reading material for some flights, that's for sure.
Yeah, I definitely take it. I highly recommend taking a look at this. It's pretty freaking cool.
Thanks a lot, Nathaniel. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Like, we love this sort of stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users in organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
Hey, CJ, I think it's that time again.
It is. Pickety pick, pick, pick.
Now, in keeping with the theme of, you know, a lot of listener stuff here, why don't we do a listener pick first?
That sounds good.
So we got a listener pick from Puck Henry, which
is a pseudonym.
Yeah. Should we say who Puck Henry is?
No, let's leave him as the mythical man.
I tell you what, he can let us know.
He can out himself. Yeah.
He can out himself. Yeah. We won't out him. So he's a friend of ours and he submitted a link. It's the Gateway to Astronaut Photography of Earth. You and I have talked about this a bunch in the past. Chris Hatfield, I think, was the one that really started it, where going up on ISS, Commander Hatfield took a lot of lessons on, you know, photography and all this stuff, and he was able to learn how to take really good pictures of Earth from ISS. And ever since then, a bunch of other astronauts have done the same thing, and they post all the pictures to Twitter, they send back high-res pics. Well, there's this site that NASA has set up, eol.jsc.nasa.gov. You go there and you can look at all of these incredibly awesome pictures of Earth that have been taken from ISS.
Isn't that amazing?
That's beautiful. Pictures going all the way back to 1961.
Dang, that's so cool. Oh man, I'm going to get stuck in a quagmire on this as well. I just looked up my hometown.
Oh, that's cool.
Yep.
I'm going to do that.
Taken in 2010. That's awesome.
So I have a
big resolution too.
We learned about this. We were sitting in a room and he mentioned this to us at a recent conference and you and I just went silent when we started like checking this out. And I'm like, he's like, "Oh, you should do this as a pick on the show." And we're like, "Nope, you know what? You should send it to us. We should be able to show it to you. Is this or give you credit for this." So yeah, this was submitted by Puck Henry. And so you guys definitely go take a look at this one. It's pretty
cool. So cool. So many photos. It's crazy. Yep.
All right, CJ, lay it us some picks on us.
Yes. Okay, my first pick, I'm going to go through them pretty quick. You know how it's a real pain in the butt? MFA is still a real pain in the butt?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out there's going to be a new password-free standard for logins that's being championed by the W3C and the FIDO Alliance standards bodies called WebAuthN. And Chrome and Firefox and Edge are apparently slated to adopt the standard. But basically what it will mean is that there's a standard way for sites to integrate with the browser to authenticate using MFA type tokens for website logins.
Mm.
So there'll be a standard kind of way to do it, which means things like little dongles and tokens that you get for doing, you know, biometric two-factor auth, random number generators, all those sorts of things will have a standard way to integrate with your browser. So in theory, it's possible that if browser makers like Safari or Apple, who make Safari do this as well, that when you're using your iPhone and you have to log into a site with two-factor auth, you're not going to be like switching back between apps and doing other bits and pieces. Apps will be able to integrate with the browser, and hardware will be able to integrate with the browser to let you do it. So it's going to improve the way logins work.
That's really cool. I love the idea of having passwordless logins. There's one site that I use that does that, and you have to do basically you get the one-time email or the one-time link that works for about 5 minutes. So I get an email sent to me and I have to click on the link. So it's validating just you are who you are based on the fact that you have access to your email. So
yeah, I use a YubiKey for a lot of sites like GitHub and stuff to sign in, which is like a small USB stick. And you just, when you're trying to go to do MFA or two-factor auth, you just plug the stick in and you just tap this little button and boom, generates this. We won't get into the details of how it works, but basically it's a secure place, generates a code and sends it to the site. And yeah, it makes life a lot easier with two-factor auth. So that's my first one, and we'll link to this in the show notes, obviously. The second one, completely non-technical related, but it's the trailer for Solo, a Star Wars Story official trailer. So this is the new movie that's coming out May 25th, and it's the backstory about Han Solo.
So I'm a little bit irritated that this is not coming out on May the 4th.
Yeah, that's kind of dumb. They should have put it out on May the 4th. That would have been way cooler.
Yeah,
I'm just stoked it's coming out.
I agree.
It looks pretty good.
Oh, it does.
It looks pretty good.
Oh, it looks awesome.
We'll have to see what the movie's like in real life. But yeah, looks really cool. So Solo, May 25th, it's coming out in theaters in the US. Not sure about the rest of the world, but looks really good.
Absolutely. Hey, I got to pick. You know when you do certain projects and you're like on GitHub and they ask you to pick a license and you're like, MIT, what?
KEYMOUSE.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, which one am I supposed to choose? I don't know if I'm supposed to choose here. There's a new license available. It's called the WTFPL. It actually spells out to do what the f*** you want to public license.
Nice.
And their logo or the part of it is choose freedom, do what the f*** you want to. The WTFPL is a very permissive license for software and other scientific or artistic works that offers a great degree of freedom. In fact, it's probably the best license out there. So basically, you just kind of say, I don't really care what you do. Here's my license. Do whatever you want. It's my disclaimer.
Go do whatever you like. Yep. There you go.
Now, here's another one. And this is going to go back to our first listener question that was submitted, or our listener feedback thing, where we talked about using Git to do a work with Excel. I have a blog post here by a gentleman who the title of the post is, I wandered off and built an IDE. Just going to start this out. A few years ago, I set out to build a small Excel plugin to help my girlfriend at the time. I ended up building a full-blown IDE over the course of 4 years and a winter in Poland at a startup accelerator. So how did this happen? Basically, as with many great endeavors of man, it all started out with an order to impress a girl. She had a ton of data inside of an Excel spreadsheet. And when you open this up, there's a really good animated GIF when you go to this blog post. But his girlfriend at the time was having a hard time dealing with Excel and data files. And she was responsible for doing quality control in a large pharmaceutical. What he ended up doing was he created like this object explorer. You can write a query and you can see all the results. And when you click on the results, it takes you to the row inside of Excel. And it's all done as an Excel plugin. It looks like
a
COM Plus style plugin. It doesn't
look like a COM one.
But it does, or a Vista one of those two. It doesn't look like it was done using the new add-in model or the current add-in model, but I don't know, man. I'm looking at this
That's amazing. It's like you can issue SQL queries into your Excel tables and then find results and then click on them and see the data in the sheets. It's kind of cool.
Looks very useful to me.
I guess if you live in Excel and go check it out. Yeah, Query Storm blog. Interesting. That's pretty sweet. Nice pick.
So those are my two picks.
Awesome, dude. Nice work.
CJ, I will see you next week.
Yes. We'll do some news next week, shall we?
Absolutely. Sounds good to me.
All right. Have a good one.
You too, man. Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show, or via RSS, at MicrosoftCloudShow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.